is 9:33. And Ms. Pakenham, would you please do the roll for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenha?
Here.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
And Dr. Riggs?
Present.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
And, you know, I know that several community members and applicants on the call as well, and I appreciate you all showing up. And as I always, the sentiments are the same. I really appreciate the work that everybody does for this. And while sometimes it may feel tedious, I appreciate the effort that everybody puts into this. Board staff, of course, always a pleasure to work with. So thank you for that. All right, so let's move on to agenda item number 4, approval of minutes. Can we bulk approve those, or do we need to do each one individually?
I think we're okay. We don't have recusals to that complicate this, I believe.
Okay, so do you have them? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I can't vote. I was not present.
Okay. So you can't vote for either one, Dr. Reyes, correct? Okay. All right. So do I have a motion to approve the October 29th regular session minutes and executive session minutes?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Okay, next agenda item number 5. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendations of the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applications. First application, Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Mr. Chair, this comes forth as the applicant, Nilvia Leonor Rodriguez-Zaldivar. I hope I am pronouncing the name correctly. This was an applicant that has applied previously. This is the second formal additional information request. To remind the committee, we were requesting additional information in terms of written documentation for unrestricted supervision hours sent directly from the supervisor. Written documentation of unrestricted supervised hours sent directly from the supervisor, the BACB spreadsheet tracker, and the presence of the supervisor. So this is kind of a reminder of where we were. I see both the supervisor and the applicant are present. So we greatly appreciate your attendance today to clarify any information that has been requested. I certainly do appreciate all of the information and documentation that was written and thoroughly explained. With this, before we move forward to discuss any of the information, Eloisa, I'm not sure how to say your last name. Please accept my most sincere of apologies. Perfect. Would you like to review any of the information and share with the committee a statement regarding what you've submitted?
Oh, yes, no problem. Okay, my English is a little bit limited, so forgive me. Yeah, I hope you understand. First of all, I would like to thank you for, you know, inviting me to be here. I think, you know, this is a unique experience. I didn't have this kind of experience before. And this demonstrates to me that you care for the field of ABA. So I'm really glad to be here. And I would like to clarify how was Nilvia's experience during the pandemic. I know it was, you know, a difficult time. However, it was a challenging, but at the same time, it was innovative. It was, we were able to reinvent ourselves and to multiply the experiences. So since this was kind of an essential job, Nilvia continued providing services during the pandemic. She just like stopped for 2 weeks when we had some, you know, suspicious possible case, positive case. And we decided to, you know, wait the 15 days. Everything was fine. No one was exposed. And we, you know, restart the services. The first months of the experience, We try to focus on her, you know, we want to make sure that she was grabbing the concepts. She was like developing the behavioral skills that we need to collect data, to use reduction protocols, to, implement acquisition skills and develop, you know, the goals that we were expecting on her as a supervisee. Eventually, we start during this first time of the experience exposing her to some other clients by assisting the BCAVA during the initial assessments, conducting VVMAP, ABLES, helping caregivers with the buy-in. She was also exposed several times to observe, like an actual supervision session, like the analyst providing services and doing caregiver training and all that. So she was also supposed to develop and design goals, reviewing behavior plans. But really the most intense part was after like the second half period of the experience, when she just turned as a actual trainee and she had an RBT on the case that she was following. And she completely became the person that was monitoring the process. She was checking on, you know, the goals, changing things in the plan, working on the central reach platform that we use to make the changes that we need, update things, communicate with the RBT. She was actively doing the caregiver training, even though in the first part, during the active pandemic, the parents were really like the RBT's aides. She was like training the parents, and that was a great experience for her. So I think she had plenty of chances to learn and to, get assured that she was getting the experience that she needed. And I was there to guide her during the process, even though there are some things that we were not documenting because we had a lot of phone calls that I don't usually accept as part of the nature of supervision. Even though the tracker says telephone calls, I don't use telephone calls as part of the supervision. So when we did, some exchanges of information when she was reviewing plans or doing things like that, we communicated. So she also, for example, had other type of experiences like participating in virtual coordination meetings with the DDD. This was not count as part of the experience, but she was exposed to that as an analyst, and she was able to present cases and to explain what we were doing. So I think it was awesome. It was plenty of experience that she had.
Thank you so much for sharing that information. I will say that you, when you submitted your written documentation, that certainly aligns with what was stated, and you very clearly articulated those pieces, as well as supplying 191 pages of supervision notes detailing what was done. And so with that, I certainly appreciate that. I want to make sure before we move forward a little bit more, I know that Nilvia's primary language is Spanish, and we had discussed a supervisor or a translator being present so that she is apprised of the information that's being discussed. Do we have a translator on the line?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton, we had arranged for a translator, and apparently it's a no-show situation. So I think that everyone else in this meeting is here as an applicant. I don't think anyone here is a translator. If you are, please identify yourself.
I can translate to her if you need. I don't know if it is possible.
Mr. Chair, I think we can go ahead and proceed. And then if we find that this solution is not ideal or effective, then we'll table the application and bring it back on the next agenda, at which time we will have confirmed a translator.
Ms. Pakadon, can we get an affirmative from Ms. Zaldivar that she's okay proceeding that way as well?
Certainly.
Okay. Ms. Zaldivar, are you okay with Ms. Arandia? Sorry, close. translating or conveying information to you.
Are you talking to Nilvia?
Yeah.
May I? Because I the pronunciation of the last name was not like, I was thinking about someone else.
Not even close. All right.
No, Saldivar. It's okay. It's okay.
Saldivar. Okay.
May I ask her?
Yes, please.
Okay, no problem. Nilvia, él está preguntando que si está bien para ti que yo pueda traducir lo que ellos están diciendo.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So let's. Could you ask her just to give a vocal affirmative or yes that she's okay, just so for the recording.
Nilvia, que si puedes decirlo con palabras para poderlo grabar.
Oh, she's muted.
Tienes que unmute el micrófono, quitar el mute. ¿Me estás escuchando? Okay.
Sí, ahorita sí. Okay, sí estoy de acuerdo en que la señora Eloisa me traduzca.
Yes, I agree that she can translate.
Okay, all right. Ms. Denton, would you like to proceed then?
Mr. Chair, I would like to proceed. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that this is not a process where the applicant is uncertain about what is happening in front of her.
Yes.
Okay.
So ultimately, at this time, I have reviewed the BACB tracker. I have reviewed all of the supervision notes. I have reviewed the written documentation. I believe that it has been superbly presented. I certainly appreciate the applicant as well as the supervisor ensuring that there was appropriate documentation of the supervision experience. I know that not every applicant that we ask for this information is able to provide such copious information. At this point, I have no concerns regarding the applicant's experience. I would open it up just to be certain to my other members of the committee to see if you have any comments.
Okay, may I translate? Okay, Nilvia, ella dice que ella ya hizo una revisión exhaustiva de lo que es el tracker, las formas que nosotros enviamos y que ella considera que toda la información que enviamos es apropiada y que pues ella no está en ningún momento preocupada por lo que está ahí, que todo le parece que está correcto, pero que ella quiere someterlo a que el comité pueda pues también hacer preguntas o decidir. No te puedo escuchar. Can you listen? No?
I can't hear her.
No se te escucha, Nilvia. Technology.
Yeah.
Todavía no.
And she's not muted.
No, it doesn't seem that she's muted.
Mr. Chair, maybe we can suggest that she use the dial-in phone.
Yeah. Number. Yeah, let's do that.
Nilvia, ellos están recomendando que marques el número de teléfono que está en el, creo que en el link lo mandaron también.
There's also that in the lower left of the window, there's that mute button with the arrow. If she could ensure that maybe the correct mic is turned on for whatever reason, it may have gotten shut off.
Que también pueda chequear bien el micrófono primero. No?
Ms. Pacanon, were you able to send her the phone number through the chat or are you emailing? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Zakia is working on that as we speak.
Great.
Okay.
She sent it an hour ago by email.
Oh, so the telephone is there? Okay. Nilvia, chequea el email porque en el email está el teléfono. Marca ese teléfono. Márcalo. Ella dice que hay varios teléfonos. Let me see if I have the link. She says that there are more than one telephone. Let me check the email.
Could you just tell her that she can dial any number in that list? She can dial any number Usually the first one works great, and then she enters the passcode that's provided.
Okay. Que marques cualquiera, Nilvia. El primero generalmente funciona y que pongas el passcode que aparece ahí, que es el 3403, cuando te lo pregunten. Sorry.
As you said earlier, technology, right?
It is incredible. Nada, Nilvia.
Tell her to now to mute her computer.
Ahora pon la computadora en mudo. Para que no tengas el ruido.
There we go.
A ver, habla un momento, Nilvia.
Ahora sí los escucho bien por aquí yo.
Okay, good. She can hear everyone.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, I believe you were going to have a couple of questions.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Hey, any further comments?
Mr. Chair, if there's no further comments, I would like to proudly say, after a long struggle from Nilvia to get her application moving forward in this process, that I have no further concerns and would like to move this forward to the full board for approval.
Thank you.
Would you pass that along to her really quick?
I want to see her smile.
Nilvia, te aprobaron la aplicación. No tienen más preguntas. Que quieren verte sonreír, dicen. Pero yo no te veo. Ah, ya. ¿Qué dices? Dilo en español, aunque sea. She's so excited.
It's certainly been a long process, and she was arduous in her attempt to secure her license. It has been shown that she had an adequate supervision experience, and we are excited to send this forward to the full board.
Thank you so much. And she's very smart, by the way. She took the test after a few months, you know, of finishing all the process, and she passed it right away. So that means that she got a very good preparation. So I'm so proud of her. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
No problem. Can we leave now? Or we should stay?
No, you're very welcome to leave, unless you want to stick around and hear the rest of it. You're certainly welcome to hop off the call. All right.
It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on Ms. Rodriguez's application. Would you like to summarize that for us?
Yes. Thank you. One second here while close that other very large file. That was a lot of supervision forms, and I just have to say I was very impressed, because as Ms. Denton stated, not always what we see from some of our other fellows out there. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes, application for Lisa Marie Rodriguez. I'm going to go ahead here and take a look at a couple items here. Application completed in its entirety. Individual notes. One thing I'll just note for the committee is that the application includes that the BCBA provided her, or she passed and obtained her BCBA certification in February of 2018. One thing I just noted in reviewing the application was that she actually finished coursework in 2016. So there's quite a gap between the coursework and the actual implementation or passing the test and becoming certified. Other thing that was noted on the application was that there was an affirmative on question 12 with regard to currently awaiting trial under indictment or have been convicted or pled no contest or guilty to any felony or misdemeanor other than minor traffic violations. Applicant provided information and an explanation and a summary of the information for a DUI in 2018. With the issues being resolved in 2019 and working through the process, attending victims impact meetings, going through other court ordered processes. There have been no other issues since that incident in 2018. Rest of the application is complete. Supervision process looked good. Supervision was provided by two individuals that had their supervision training completed very early on in the process by the BACB, but yet prior to the supervision of the individual. So with regard to the application, you know, really having looked at the explanation, you know, I think that the explanation makes sense in terms of what occurred. It was several years ago in the past, have not had any reoccurrence of those issues. Is the applicant on the line today?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much. So, you know, typically, you know, the committee appreciates the fact that things happen in our past and that we are working to learn from those experiences and to make ourselves better. You highlighted much of that in your letter without really, there's no reason to revisit the incident itself from my point of view, but just maybe just a brief summary, if you will, for the board of the lessons you've taken away from such an experience.
Yeah, like I kind of stated, I've never really been in trouble with the law. And so it was a very unfortunate situation that I was in, and really just being cautious. And you know, it's something that could definitely be worse than what it was. And so that's something that I've been really taking precaution for.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Dr. Sinoff, I would allow that if any other committee members have questions for Ms. Rodriguez with regard to her application, then that would be the time.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I actually do note a discrepancy in the explanation versus the police report. And so I am interested to hear from Ms. Rodriguez, if you could provide a verbal summary of the incident, because it appears that the account that was provided in writing plus the account that was provided in the police report are kind of two different or varying stories.
So I was finishing up at a restaurant, and I was parked in front of a gas station in a red zone line. So I was parked and the car was on, and the police had pulled over and had asked what was wrong. And I was looking for my phone. And so he had asked, like, oh, have you been drinking? And I didn't lie. I said, yeah, I had a few. And then it kind of went into the, you know, the whole procedure of doing the walk and stuff. And then he took me in. So I didn't, so I was parked, right? But because the car was on and I was parked in an illegal or like the red zone. And then he asked the question. And like I said, I've never been in trouble with the law. And so I didn't want to lie. And so that's what happened. And then I got taken into the
the jail or the community police department.
Thank you. Do you have any explanation as to or understanding as to why the actual infraction identified that you were actually stopped in a travel lane? So as opposed to being parked in front of a gas station, but actually stopped in a travel lane.
Was it there an explanation? Is that what you?
Yeah. Do you have any explanation? So I'm hearing that and I'm just trying to reconcile. So yeah. I'm hearing from your understanding, you're parked in front of a gas station, but it was a non-parking zone, but the police report says that you were actually in a travel lane.
So I think the travel lane is travel when you go right. Right. I think when it's not a, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like, I was on the way that if a car was to go right, they could potentially hit me because I was parked on the right side of a stoplight, if that makes sense. Cause it was a four-way stop. I'm not too sure if I remember.
Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't you weren't parked in like an illegal parking spot. You were parked to the right
of a right
in the travel lane.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah. I just sorry. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So and the gas station was at a four corner stop. And so.
Okay.
That's the travel.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure, I can see, especially if obviously, you know, we're not experts in traffic law, so I can see where the discrepancy would come in. I just wanted to make sure, because I do think that there is a significant difference between stopping on the side of the road or in a no parking zone or a fire zone versus a lane of travel. And so I do think that in the future, I understand, especially at a four point stop, and I understand your impression and interpretation. In the future, I would just make sure that that you do align any of those explanations with the police report, because, like I said, that stopping in a lane of travel is different, and where it becomes pertinent, because then it's like, okay, where are the semantics again? Where it becomes pertinent is in the severity then of the alcohol use, right? And so, you know, it's one thing to have a few drinks and be pulled over, you know, be on the side of the road and, you know, get caught versus sleeping in the car or being in a travel lane where the level of intoxicity, I can't even speak today, is that of a concern of potential other concerns. And I think that that's where Dr. Davey was getting as far as kind of, if you could provide us a summary of lessons, the kind of lessons learned. I understand that you, have learned lessons. What is your current status as far as, like alcohol use, driving?
Yeah, I don't, I got out of the relationship I was in. I don't do it. I mean, if I do it once a week socially, but I don't do those things. And, you know, I paid a lot of money, and that really set me back tremendously. And so that was a wake up call. And, you know, I could have ruined my whole career, and that, you know, hit me really hard. So,
yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for being here, for answering these questions. I know it's never fun to have to one, relive this, but then have to sit in front of peers and have them ask you some, you know, personal questions. So I appreciate you being here. And that's all the questions that I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. All right.
Then I'll go ahead and state that we'd like to move this application to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Thanks, Ms. Rodriguez, for being here too. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Let's see. Next application, Dr. Race, Ms. Friston.
Mr. Chair. Sorry, Dr. Race. I am recused from this item.
All right. So, Ms. Friston received her BCBA September 30th, 2021. She completed her master's degree at ASU in special education with an emphasis in ABA, and that was completed in December of 2020. supervision all occurred at AST between January of 20 to July of 21 across three supervisors for a total of 1,506 hours. I should say 0.66. I don't want to cheat anyone out of those last 0.66. All were done by individuals who were licensed in the state and had met qualifications for supervision. There was a yes answer to question 12. Did review all of the information that was submitted. I believe that was sufficient. The incident stems from something that occurred when the individual was in high school, 2009, so well over 10 years ago. There have been no other legal issues since. They've met all the requirements stemming from that incident. So upon my review, I would say that this application should be moved forward, but certainly open it up to my fellow committee members.
Any other comments? Okay. All right, thank you. Thanks, Dr. Reitz.
Mr. Chair, the applicant is present too. So I don't know if the committee needs to acknowledge or ask any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Friston? Okay. Well, Ms. Friston, thank you for being here. Appreciate it. The committee doesn't have any questions for you, so you're welcome to leave if you'd like to.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next application is Ms. Guasp. Ms. Benton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me get to that section on my document. All right. Ms. Guasp is coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. She passed her exam in September of 2021. She received a master's in science and psychology from Capella University, and her experience verification form shows her supervision dates were from February of 2020 to May of 2021. Her supervision occurred in the state of Texas under Amanda Modrowski, who was licensed in the state of Texas during the time of supervision. She was licensed from September of 2019 to September of 2021. Her license is expired. However, at the time of supervision, it was active. Ms. Guasp acquired 1,500 hours of experience in, as I mentioned, in Texas under a Texas licensed BCBA. I do not note any concerns with the application and would open it up to committee members before moving it forward to the full board.
Any discussion on that?
I would recommend, Mr. Chair, that we move this forward to the full board for approval.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Dowell. All right. Next application is Ms. Devereaux. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Devereaux received her BCBA certificate in October of 2021. She graduated in May of 2021 from Arizona State University's online program with a Master's of Arts in Special Education and Emphasis in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,525.74 hours of supervision under three supervisors in Arizona who are all LBAs. I did not note any concerns with this application. Recommend it move forward to the board for approval. Okay. Next application is Ms. Lawler. Dr. Reitz, your lead on that.
Ms. Lawler received her BCBA in October of 21. She completed a master's degree at ASU in special education with an emphasis in ABA in August of 2020. All supervision occurred at Advanced Autism Center for Treatment here in Mesa, Arizona, between October 20th and September 21. For a total of 1,666.25 hours by a variety of supervisors all listed. There were two things that I noted on the application. I'll look for my committee members to make sure that I'm accurate in these questions. The first is that in looking at the timeline of supervision, it appears that this is over the amount that can be counted. So with my math and my understanding of requirements, it's 130 hours max per month. That would take you to 1560 for a year's time. What I'm seeing is this all occurred in just around a year, but it was over that amount. So that was one question I had. Additionally, one of the supervisors listed Hope Lawrence. It appears, and it's a small amount of time, but it appears that supervision started in February of 21, but the supervision course to become qualified to provide that supervision happened in the month of March, so the month after that supervision started. So those were the two things I noted, and again, would welcome any comments that my fellow committee members have, particularly related to those two.
Ms. Lawler is on the phone. If we could specifically ask her, or on the call, excuse me, we could specifically ask her this question. So, Ms. Lawler, I'm sure you heard everything. Would you mind responding to that?
Yeah, I would love to. So to the first point, it is more than allotted. My understanding was that I could report more than 130 hours as long as I was only counting 130 hours per month. But if I got more than 130 hours, it was okay. And then I just made sure I got the 1500. And so I just happened to have more, but I didn't count more than 130 hours per month. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. So I don't know if that answers that question, but yes. So I did report more than 1500, but I never counted more than 130 a month to reach the final number. And then the second question, I need to do more research on that, honestly. I need to look at my logs. I think I knew that Hope received her supervision. I don't know if it's off the top of my head, but I knew it was in February or March. I think that I looked at the correct date, but maybe I need to look at my logs and make sure I'm reporting the accurate information. I knew when she started, she let me know when she was able to, or when I was able to count supervision from her. And then that's when I started tracking my hours, but I apologize if I, you know, miswrote something. So I can go back and look at that.
No, you're fine. I think we're in the middle of thinking.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I can't see everyone. I can only see one person, so I wasn't sure what was going on. I can also just look right now if I can look quickly, but
we're engaging in covert behavior.
I apologize. I don't know how that would have happened, but I'm sure it's my mistake.
I don't have the breakdown of hours for that particular supervisor for Hope. So that would be helpful just to see. It shows that there were 180.5 hours under that supervisor. And that occurred between February and September. So I imagine that there, if the timing was just reported wrong, that would be helpful for us to know.
Okay.
And it would just be for that 1 month time frame, is my understanding. But again, I'll look to my fellow committee members for any additional questions or thoughts.
Go ahead, Dr. Davis Wilson.
No, go right ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, would Dr. Rates, would it be appropriate to do a first additional information request to get that information. Committee members, thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Reitz, that was going to be my suggestion as well. My concern is back to Dr. Reitz's point, is that the supervision actually did occur in less than 12 months. And if you do the math of 130 hours, let me do the math again, just to make sure. But so I correct myself. I see what Dr. Reitz is saying. So because it fell 2 weeks short, theoretically, yeah, it could be done in that amount of time, and still meet the 1500 hours. And we've never took a stance on people like over reporting. And because she did over report, it is entirely possible that if Ms. Lawrence's hours were removed, that she would still meet the requirements. But I think all of that would have to be specified through a request for additional information. And so we would just want to know which hours are going to count and which ones aren't towards that 1500.
So if we subtract the 180.5 hours, we're still over 1500 hours, correct? With the exception of Ms. Lawrence, or am I off on that?
I think it falls
barely short by like 20, okay. Not quite 20 hours. Yeah. So we couldn't subtract all. I know.
Okay.
It would come to 1,486.
So I guess, yeah. So Dr. Reitz, do you have some specifics that you would like to see in the additional information, or just the extent to which, or the number of hours that were accumulated with Ms. Lawrence after her supervision training occurred? Would that capture it? Yeah.
Okay. I think that those supervision logs would cover that, yes.
Okay. Ms. Packett on board staff, did you all get of that? Okay. All right. So Ms. Lawler, was that clear what we're asking for? Okay. You will be getting a letter from board staff that delineate exactly what we would need back, and they'll be sending you that letter sometime soon. So, okay.
Thank you so much. I apologize. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Okay. Let's see. Dr. Davis Wilson. Oskol Holmgren. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yes, Ms. Holmgren took her exam in May of 2018 and passed. She has a master's in special education from University of Illinois. She graduated in December of 2018. She did the ABA FIT courses and graduated in December of 2017. All of her supervision hours were in the state of Illinois, where licensure was not required. She did complete 1500 hours from the periods of January 2016 to August 2017. I see no concerns with her application, and I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you. Next is Ms. Schultz. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Schultz received her BCPA certificate in 10 of 21. She graduated in August of 2021 from Arizona State University's Master's of Arts in Special Education program with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She received 1,597 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in Arizona who are all licensed behavior analysts. I did not know any concerns and recommend it before the board for approval. Any comments on that? Okay. Next application is Ms. Merriman. Dr. Davey, you're lead on that.
Thank you, Dr. Senhoff. Ms. Merriman comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. I became a board certified behavior analyst October of 2021. Applicant completed all the information required, graduate of Arizona State University's special education program. Supervision was completed by BCBAs that are also licensed behavior analysts here in the state of Arizona. Supervision looks to be complete, and within proper timeframes, then I would submit this can move forward to the full board for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. The next application is Ms. Kinbeck. For that. And the looks like Ms. Kinbeck is on the call. I'm going to summarize, and then Ms. Kinbeck, I'll give you an opportunity to talk if you'd like to. Ms. Kinbeck received her BCPA in August of 2021. She graduated in May of 2021 from Arizona State University's online program with a Master of Arts in Special Education and emphasis in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,538 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in Arizona who are all licensed behavior analysts. Of note, Ms. Kinbeck selected yes on number 12 of page 2, related to awaiting trial under indictment, had been convicted of, pled no guilty or guilty to a felony misdemeanor or other minor traffic offenses. She did provide a statement and the court documents for that. The DUI was cited in 2010, but I did not know any other concerns, and there had been no other incidents since then. So I don't have any concerns regarding that part of the application. Some clerical notes on page 34 of the PDF, multiple supervisors form at one organization form, provided this by the psych board. The hours listed for Corinna Callahan do not match the hours on the supervised work experience form on page 36 of the PDF. So the change is about 15 hours difference, but still over the number of hours needed. So because they indicate a sufficient number of hours, and I would just request a clerical change in those before. So given all that information, I'd recommend it move forward to the board for approval with those clerical changes. And if do any of my committee members have any other comments to make or questions? Okay. Ms. Kinbeck, you're welcome to say something if you want to, but it's not necessary. We're moving this to the board for approval. So,
great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for being here. Appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Next application is Ms. Mathy. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mathy passed her exam in January of 2021. She completed a master's in psychology with an emphasis in ABA in March of 2020. She did complete her supervision hours in New Mexico, where licensure is not required, for slightly over 1,500 hours from the periods of September 2019 to November 2020. I did note that one of her supervisors, who supervised about 12.25 hours, so it does bring her slightly below, was not an approved supervisor. So I know that the supervisor supplied the board or the applicant, somebody supplied the board with copies of the training. Simply taking the training is not approved by the BACB. And so in order for us to count those hours, that individual has to be registered with the BACB as an approved supervisor. So my recommendation would be that we submit a request for additional information, and we request documentation to, since it's 12.2 hours, if there's additional supervision that has occurred that can make up that difference, that documentation be provided to do so. If it was an issue where I know there's been situations where the BACB has had technical issues on their side, then that can be the supervisor can seek clarification from the BACB to provide to us in writing something regarding that discrepancy. But otherwise, it appears like there might have just been a misunderstanding, an assumption that the training would suffice. And unfortunately, it does not. That individual does need to be a registered and approved supervisor through the BACB.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Any further comments on or from the committee? Okay, so I guess a first additional information request would go out to clarify those points that Dr. Davis-Wilson made. Okay, so next application is Ms. DeAndre Escalante. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Mr. Chair, Ms. DeAndre Escalante passed her board certified behavior analyst exam in May of 2021. She attended Northern Arizona University and graduated with a master's in education of early childhood special education in December of 2015. She then attended Arizona State University from December of 2018 to December of 2019 and received a graduate certificate from Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College in Applied Behavior Analysis. Her supervision dates were from January of 2018 to February of 2021. She received her supervision all in the state of Arizona under BCBAs who are licensed in the state of Arizona for a total of 1,518 hours. There's one small clerical error on the multiple supervisors at one organization form. She lists her start date of supervision as January of 2018 and her end date of supervision as February of 2018. I am almost positive that it's just an error in the year and that likely it was intended for this to be February of 2021. Given just a small correction on the clerical form to ensure that all information is accurate, I see no other issues with the application and would move that it goes forward to the full board.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Dunn. Next application is Ms. Lynn. Dr. Dave, your lead.
Thank you very much. And I do believe thank you very much. Ms. Lynn's application comes forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. She received her BCBA in 2015. She completed the application in its entirety, listing Pepperdine University for her undergraduate psychology, National University for her ABA coursework. Individual received supervision in California. California does not have a licensure law, as we're aware, and therefore not subject to oversight by a licensed behavior analyst. I have no other concerns about the application and would move that it go forward to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you, Dr. Davey. Let's see. Next applicant is Ms. Nguyen. Sorry, Dr. Ray, you are lead on that.
Thank you. The individual indicated that they have received their BCBA in November of 21. They completed a master's degree in ABA from Ball State, and that was completed in May of 21. Supervision occurred between May of 2020 and July of 21, and that all occurred here in Phoenix at Ascend for a total of 1,795 hours. There were two notes on this application that I wanted to highlight for the committee. Two individuals who provided supervision, Lauren Allegra, licensed in Colorado, but it appears all services happened here.
and all supervision happened here. And then a second supervisor received their Arizona licensure, but they received that Arizona licensure in June of 21, but supervision started in November of 2020. So while licensure is not required in Colorado, the note that I have is that all supervision experiences happened here, but it appears that 485 or so hours of that supervision occurred with a supervisor who is not here in the state of Arizona.
Dr. Reitz, is there any indication that the services being provided were outside the state, or is that unclear?
It's unclear from the documentation that was submitted. All that we have is the one location and listed, and the only address is Phoenix. So it's unclear to me whether or not that's the case. So again, I think the challenge we've run into this before, while all the supervision happened, in fact, more than is needed occurred in that time frame, there are those two individuals who were not here in the state. Well, one was, the time was just, they became licensed, but not until many months after the supervision started.
Okay. Any other comments from committee members? So I guess, could we get a fair put in place for to get that information? All right. Thank you, Ms. Pack. Okay, so next application is Ms. Clausen. I'm the lead on that one. Ms. Clausen received her BCBA in September of 2021. She graduated in May of 2019 from Arizona State University with a Master's of Ed in Curriculum Instruction with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She received 1,549.5 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in Arizona who are all licensed behavior analysts. And I did not note any concerns and recommend that move forward to the board for approval. Next application is Ms. Tompkins. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Ms. Tompkins passed her exam in November of 2019. She graduated from Arizona State University with a Master's of Education from Mary Lou Fulton College of Teachers College. She received her supervision from May of 2017 to July of 2018, all in the state of California, which does not require licensure. She received 1,800 hours under Janice Rizzio. With this application, I'm not sure if it is something that board staff can attest to. However, we do require in our Arizona Administrative Code in the rules here that an official transcript for a graduate degree from an accredited institution is submitted in that application. I did not note a transcript. Board staff, can we confirm that this wasn't just left out of the application that was uploaded to Google?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton, that is always possible. Why don't we hold action on this application and give Zakiya a chance to look for that, and then we can circle back to it when she has had that opportunity.
Okay, great. All right. excuse me. Next application is Ms. Erbschlo. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. And you are braver than I am on the last name. I was just going to refer to her as Alexis, if that was okay. And I believe she's on the call, correct? I think I see her. Thank you. And thank you for attending. We'll get to just a question I'd like some clarification on once we get there. So applicant comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, passed her exam for become a BCBA the summer of 2021, individual completed their application, noting Arizona State University Master's of Arts in Education through the Special Education Program for her education and coursework. When we get to essentially page 4 of the PDF, we'll see that supervised experience towards certification and licensure, according to this, began 2019 and went through 2021. These experiences are both at the same location, under the same guidance of the professional supervisor. Just appears that title changed. As we kind of go through the application information and move to page 10 of the PDF, this is where my question came. We have a listing of 4 supervisors, supervision beginning start dates in 2020, or actually 2019, and going through that 2021 date. Ms. Eunice, the supervisor that signed off on the section on supervised experience, her start date is 2020, yet we have experiences going on in 19 and early in 2020 as well. And so the question I had, and I'd asked that the applicant be on the call, is one, why don't we have the other supervisors signing off on that time period for those hours? And if she could give us some explanation as to why the forms are presented the way they are. So with that, I think I will turn it over to the applicant and they can walk us through what's occurring here.
Yeah, hi. You got my last name right, which is pretty awesome. Just wanted to give you props for that. But Eunice was the clinical director at the time that oversaw all of my other supervisors that started in 2019. Then the hours that I listed under her are the ones where she directly supervised me, whereas she was overseeing my supervisors as the clinical director during that 2019 period.
Okay. So, committee members, this would be similar to like a faculty member overseeing or another individual at the agency, you know, let's just call them chief clinical officer, somebody to the effect clinical director overseeing other BCBAs that are overseeing supervision. And so I think I just wanted to make sure that as a committee, we were all understanding that and felt that that was appropriate.
Questions or comments from other committee members?
I mean, Dr. Stenhoff, don't we kind of see this as if an individual such as yourself would sign off, like when we had in the past individuals signing off as professors from the programs? This kind of falls within that same exact line, correct?
Yeah.
My only question really is you know, outside of this applicant is, how are we to know that? You know, it's one thing if it's a faculty person that's on tenure and easily searched in terms of when they've been at a university and when they've left, versus, you know, essentially seeing that the list here just includes a clinical director that's signing off for people where supervision actually was prior to her supervising. So do we just, I'm fine with it, but do we essentially just accepting that that individual is employed at this agency during that time period and we go forward?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I don't think that that it requires that they're even employed. I think that it's an attestation that they are signing that they are familiar and knowledgeable with the individual's internship. And while I do agree with you that it would seem weird to have someone who isn't employed sign off on it, I don't know that we have the authority as it's written now. Doesn't mean we can't propose to change it as it's written now to say, okay, well, that doesn't seem reasonable. Also, I think depending on when they took over, I know several systems that are solid enough that even if someone came in, they would still be able to attest to the nature of the supervision. And so if that individual is able to oversee notes and see if they've got a standardized supervision curriculum, those sorts of things, then I think that they would still be able to be eligible to to sign here. And again, it's on them, right? It's an attestation of them saying, like, I'm familiar with this program and I'm familiar with it enough so that I'm willing to sign on behalf of all of the supervision, which, as we talked about when we did speak to the university professors, is that that's a pretty big task to take on. I think we have advised against or advised to consider the implications of signing off on such a big task. And so I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to revisiting on a future agenda why this is acceptable and how we can move forward with potential changes, simply because I think originally it was intended to help move the process through. But now we accept the BACB forms as well. So it shouldn't be a situation where they can't get a hold of their supervisor at all from their prior site and, you know, what have you, because we have other pathways from that. So I hear your concerns and I understand them. I think separate of this application, we can look at it, but as it states, it's really just an attestation, and we did accept it in the past from the university professors, but we also had those program folks in Dr. Haas, Dr. Steno, and explained to them, you know, the implications of signing off on something that you maybe had some oversight with, but maybe not had provided the supervision yourself.
Yeah, no, I appreciate all the comments. And I think, you know, in the end, the supervising BCVA signed off on the period from August 19 through April 21st, or April 2021, essentially saying that, you know, as you said, they're attesting to the fact that they're knowledgeable of the applicant's internship. So, you know, I just bring it up, and I wanted to hear the applicant affirm that verbally. And that may be all we could do is ask the applicant to make sure that that is on the up and up. And with that, I'm wanting to move this forward to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Any further comments?
Just would thank the applicant for being here. I think that clears it up, and there doesn't have to be a second request for information and does not hold up the licensure process. So thank you to board staff to dealing with my email and reaching out to the applicant earlier this week to invite them. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. And again, as Dr. Davis said, we really appreciate you attending and taking the time to be here. So. Okay, let's see. Next.
Mr. Chair, can I interject? Zakiya has confirmed that the application for number 16, Ms. Tompkins, is incomplete. So we won't move that one forward. We will bring it back to you when the missing document is received.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's see. Next application, Ms. Burgos. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that.
Burgos received her BCBA in November of 2019. She completed a master's degree at ASU between October of 17 and May of 19 with the Master's of Arts in Special Education emphasis in ABA. Supervision occurred across two programs in California and across five supervisors for a total of 1,500 hours. Those supervisors did meet qualifications for supervision. So at this time, I don't have any concerns with this application and would recommend that it move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Reitz. Next application is Ms. Howell. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're leading up.
Yes, Ms. Howell is applying for a licensure again. She was previously licensed and that license had expired. She passed her exam in November of 2017. She is also licensed as a teacher, and that license is in good standing. She completed her master's in education at the ASU's online curriculum and instruction program in May of 2016. She did complete 1,500 hours under a licensed behavior analyst here in Arizona. One of the issues with the application is, we're actually, I think this is application number four. So we had the application, that, that was, we had applications that were previous historically from previous licensure. But then over the last couple of months, the board staff has had to work with the individual on getting all information. It appeared that in some of the submissions of the application, Ms. Howell omitted information, specifically that she omitted her teacher's license in one of the applications. I also noted that she still, in the most current application that we have, she still omitted her current work experience. However, because of the work of board staff, we do have a written letter from her outlining her current work experience and the nature of the experience, which is essentially what we would request if we did send a request for additional information. So I do greatly appreciate that board staff worked through that to try to get as much information as we could to us. Other than just the concern of the documentation not being complete each time, the having to go back and forth, the not reviewing instructions, those sorts of things. At all of that put aside, the current documentation that we have before us, it appears does meet the standards for licensure. And I would say that we would move it forward, just noting the concerns in one, just the lapse and letting it expire, even though she continued to work, which I guess is within the prerogative of individuals, right? She was working under supervision, that we have that supervisor's information and the nature of her role and her employer. We have that now, but again, that was still omitted from the current application. And the only reason why we have it is because board staff were, you know, trying to sort through other things and we happened to get a letter. So other than just the concerns of kind of the clerical and, missing details and such, I think the application is complete and can be now forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Next is Ms. Deutschman. Ms. Den, you're the lead on that.
Ms. Deutschman passed her exam in February of 2019. She received her master's in professional behavior analysis from Florida Institute of Technology. She graduated from there in December of 2018. She did an intensive practicum under Byron Neef for 750 hours. She received additional supervision under two supervisors. These two supervisors provided a total of 820 hours. It should be noted that Arizona Administrative Code Chapter 26 requires that supervision is not provided by someone who is related to, subordinate to, or employed by the supervisee during the period of supervised experience. Two supervisors, that would be Alicia Anson and Kelly DaCosta, both answered yes to question 11 on the supervised work experience for independent fieldwork form. This is a concern due to that requirement that supervision is not provided by someone who is related to, subordinate to, or employed by the supervisee. At this time, it does appear that 820 hours cannot be counted towards this applicant's hours. With this information, perhaps we could do a first additional request for information to get some clarification on what the nature of this relationship was. If perhaps maybe it was just a mistake on two people's part, that's a lot of hours to not be able to count towards licensure.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton, not terribly recently, but in the past, this committee has seen exactly what you speculate, which is that, curiously, this question was answered incorrectly. So we can certainly seek that clarification, but it's entirely possible that it's just simply a incorrect answer.
Well, I'd be very excited if that were the case.
So if it's incorrect, would we be okay to move this forward to the full board, Ms. Denton?
Yes, I would feel comfortable moving this forward if that was an error. The licensure occurred, or the states that supervision occurred in had the appropriate licensure standards. The total number of hours were appropriate across the time span. It's just that one particular area of concern.
Okay, so board staff, you'll be able to check that out, and then if it is in fact true, then I think we move to a different issue here.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, maybe in your direction to us, you can include that if the answer was in both cases or in either case correct, then a fare would be issued for presumably any documentation of any other hours of supervision.
Yeah, please.
Well, thank you.
Okay, next application is Mr. Bustito. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that. I believe he is also on the call.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Bustito. See, word problems today, for joining us today. All right, Mr. Again, if you saw my handwriting, you would see I'm actually reading exactly what my handwriting looks like. exam was passed in April of 2021. Supervision was completed by licensed behavior analysts in Arizona for over 1,500 hours from periods of, I believe that is December of 2014 through March of 2017. He did do his Master's of Arts from U of A, which did include the BACB coursework. He graduated with that in May of 2014. Mr. Bustito did identify that he has a prior conviction of a DUI from 2009. This is going to come as a shock to all of you, but I have no questions or concerns with the documentation provided. And he is a licensed teacher in good standing. I have reviewed all of the information. I will note, just because we do generally note and make it a habit to note, there is quite a bit of time between completion of degree and hours and the passing of the exam, but nothing that is limiting or preventing this application from moving forward. So I do recommend that it be moved to the full board for approval.
Any other comments from committee? Questions? Mr. Bustito, you are not required to say anything if you don't want to. You heard Dr.
Time lapse. If you guys want a time lapse. So at the time, the University of Arizona did not have a quote unquote certified BCBA master's program. So I did the coursework, and then my advisor struggled to find a supervisor at the time. So I kind of graduated without a supervisor and then went back and did the coursework. And then, you know, it took me a few attempts to pass the exam. COVID obviously didn't help. So that's the big time gaps of it.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate you being here, and thank you for clarifying that gap as well. So, Whereas, as Dr. Davis Wilson said, we're proposing this moves forward to the board for approval. So thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Okay. Next, agenda item 5B, we're moving on to behavior analyst applications for licensure by universal recognition. The first applicant is Ms. Christie. And I believe Ms. Christie's on the line as well. Just in summary, going through the requirements, Ms. Christie meets the requirements, has provided information regarding her, not citizenship, but her residency in the state of Arizona. She has a BCBA. one area that, you know, my fellow committee members have noted is the one area that is perhaps lacking is licensure as a behavior analyst in another state, just due to the fact that Pennsylvania is not recognized by the VACB, and the licensure in the state of Pennsylvania is as a the title's eluding me, but is a behavior. If one of my license or one of my committee members can jump in, but the term that Pennsylvania is, here it is, behavior licensed behavior specialist. So any comments from committee members on this or discussion on this? I know we've discussed this with other applicants in the past.
Mr. Chair, do you recall what the conclusion was with the other applicants? Because I believe that it came down to, or it will need to come down to, Ms. Galvin providing some guidance, because even though the BACB may not recognize Pennsylvania, and I understand why, and I see all of that, I think the issue comes down to whether or not Pennsylvania has a law that governs those services. And if I recall, it doesn't quite read as like a practice and title act like we have here in Arizona, right? Where the practice and title act is you cannot practice behavior analysis, call yourself behavior analyst, or give the public any impression that you're practicing behavior analysis in the state. And so if we're looking at supervision needs to align with the laws in the state in which you practiced, I think that you can still practice. I don't think it reads the same. And so I don't recall what our conclusion on that has been. I know Ms. Galvin has kind of chimed in a little bit, but I don't know if board staff has some history or Dr. Davey does.
Yeah. So I have a little different take on it in that through the universal licensure piece, that the our license, when it essentially is lined up next to whatever is coming from another state, they need to be equivalent and need to essentially align properly. And so, that would really be the question, is that the individual in Pennsylvania, did they go through the right amount of coursework? Did they go through the right amount of supervision? Did they go through all of these particular things, to be able to be looked at as an equivalent to come to the state and receive licensure? If the answer is they did a BCBA program that was certified and looked, it was essentially a certified or as a board certified behavior analyst at the national level, then the discrepancies with what Pennsylvania may require, would almost suggest that universal recognition may not be the best path for the individual, that just applying would be the proper path.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I could also chime in and augment slightly to what Dr. Davey has described. The challenge with the language of the Universal Recognition Statute is that it does require that the applicant is capable of practicing at the same practice level. So when it's the application reflects that the license held in the initial state is not congruent with that in Arizona, it becomes impossible for this committee and for this board to determine it is at the same practice level. But you do have information from the BACB, which certainly points to the fact that of those incongruencies. So universal recognition, as Dr. Davey said, may not be the appropriate pathway through which to apply. This committee and this board would have a better opportunity to ascertain qualifications for licensure through the general application pathway. That doesn't mean that applying for the general pathway is a guarantee of licensure, but the concern would be with universal recognition, does this committee want to recommend to the board a denial when there may be another opportunity? So that's something that I think the committee needs to sort of, you know, help this applicant understand what her options might be.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacnon, yes, no, I agree with that. As far as, like I said, the issue with the licensure in Pennsylvania is that it is generic, and that I say generic, and that a speech path can hold it without having any coursework in behavior analysis. They have it opened, and I think the way that they have it defined in their statute is it's any type of behavior modification. So even skill acquisition and speech therapy could count. So no, I completely agree, because I would be concerned if we took precedence in saying, hey, you can come over here. I know last time we had a conversation of like whether or not the BACB exam would have to be required. But I do think the like minimum of the ability to practice, like, I'm interested also to know, like, if insurance companies recognize this as a licensure, you know, just as far as whether or not independent practice is what we're truly looking at, or is this just a designation for them? Go ahead, Dr. Dewey.
No, I'm sorry. I was actually thinking as you were talking, so I'll let you finish.
No, I'm thinking more of with the universal recognition, and I don't disagree with what's being said. I'm just thinking more of the stance that the governor's office has taken on it. If we were to deny this, what would be, which I'm not saying that's the direction. It could be as simple as asking them to go through the full application process. Like, I'm not saying denial, but what would be the ramifications when we go to the governor's office and say, hey, this isn't the same practice level. How do we demonstrate that? Because so far they've been pretty broad in how they define same practice level versus on how we do. And so I'm just trying to talk through like what that would look like.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, so one option could be that if this committee is reticent to recommend a denial to the board, we could ask the applicant if she would be willing to withdraw this application. We would, with your direction, transfer the fee. It seems unreasonable for us to request that she submit yet another fee, but we would then supply her with the general application forms and have her submit through that process. Obviously, additional information would need to be supplied and arranged to be sent to us, but that to me seems more palatable than, you know, this board and the applicant potentially navigating a denial situation, which of course is a reportable action to the National Practitioners Data Bank. As you said, you know, we would have to work with the governor's office on this matter, and those responses are not always as swift as is ideal. So that's something I think maybe the committee could contemplate.
Yeah. You know, I like that idea. I think that giving the applicant the option to be reviewed under through the more common application process, bringing forth her certification and supervision experience to receive licensure makes a lot of sense versus the denial. I would say that at this point, I'm not reticent to provide a denial, because in fact, like when I look at, if I was to put this behavior specialist license side by side with our rules and statutes, they are not equal practices. And I will point to the behavior specialist language that requires 1,000 hours of in-person clinical experience with individuals with behavior challenges. 1,000 hours of experience in a related field with individuals with autism. Our bill is not, our rules and statutes are not limited to behavior challenges or children with autism. or individuals with autism. Second, the coursework that is aligned for these professionals is nowhere near the coursework that we require to become licensed in the state of Arizona to operate. And 90 hours worth of coursework versus our 270 plus hours, to me, is a public risk and a public safety issue. And so I, for one, do not see these as equivalent. And I think that, you know, we probably need to add this to an agenda topic for our next meeting and go ahead and start to lay out some discussions around these states that have non-equivalent licensure laws so that we can point to those discussions and point to those facts should we have to ultimately deny one of these.
Yeah, Dr. Davey, I agree, Mr. Chair, if I may. Ms. Pakanan, so again, I'm just playing devil's advocate because mostly because Jean's not here to help us out with translating the universal recognition. If we were to issue a denial, so our options would be to go the pathway of saying, hey, why don't you apply under full licensure? If by chance that individual has only completed 750 supervised hours, are we essentially operating outside of the governor's order essentially to not dig into other people's things by kind of backdooring them into providing us that information? Because then it would be, well, nope, you only did 750 hours instead 1500. So now you still aren't eligible. So go through that whole process to possibly still not be eligible. So
we're not guaranteing them anything though. I mean,
no, I understand, Dr. Davey, I understand that. Yeah. And I just want to make sure that we're clear on what the governor's expectations are, because to date, the expectations are that we inform them of any decisions in which there's a denial related to universal recognition. And while we're not denying yet, if we deny later under, I just don't want to be in a position like we've been in a prior position of then the governor's office coming back and being like, you guys didn't even have the right to send her down this other pathway. That's all I just want to make sure we're not, because we've already gotten a little slap on the wrist for similar, like, not at the committee level, but similar like movements under very similar methodology. And we lost that battle. And now we are required to inform the governor's office anytime we are not accepting a universal recognition. And so again, I think I'm just concerned on the semantics, not me personally, but in playing devil's advocate, I'm concerned on the semantics of like, well, we encouraged her to withdraw this and go this other pathway. But we've seen in the past when we've done that, that licensee lawyer up. And again, we lost that battle. So I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Again, I think, you know, to my point of like, let's agendize this item and let's take a look at these non-equivalent specialist licensures that we've seen to date or other ones we've identified, and let's lay out some thought process onto why they're not equivalent, so that when we decide, if it has to come to that decision, that we have the reasoning behind it. And if someone doesn't like it, then they can go do what they'd like with it. But, you know, we probably need to put some thought, you know, not trying to interpret the law, but why we as a committee do not see that as an equivalent level of practice coming from this individual. And with that, you know, we can get slapped on the wrist all we want. At least we would be able to say this is our reasoning behind it, and it's not arbitrary and capricious. So I think that would be, you know, the reason to agendize it, have Jean work with us, have us do a little bit of research on the ones that keep coming to us so that we can formulate the documentation to be able to help us move forward.
And Dr. Davey, I agree with you 100%. One thing then that I would suggest is rather than giving the applicant the option to withdraw and apply under the other standards, I think we should also give them the option to just hang tight until we have some more legal interpretation from Ms. Galvin. Because my concern is just, I 100% hear and agree with what you're saying. My concern is just the moment that we move them out of universal recognition, reporting requirements change. And I just don't want to be in a position where we've encouraged them to go down a pathway that they still then get denied, but we're not having to follow our other obligation to report the denial of a universal recognition. And so, so what I'm saying is if we're saying we don't recognize Pennsylvania, then that would be a denial. And if we aren't ready to make that stance, which I'm not sure we are, then I think the applicant should be able to hold until we are, as far as, you know, getting some legal interpretation from Ms. Galvin, because I just don't want to be in a position where she's like, oh yeah, sure, I'll just send this other information. And then we still deny, because then we got this other issue of we kind of encouraged this other pathway and she still doesn't meet the standard. But I think if board staff could present both options and say, look, if you meet the standard for regular licensure, go down that path. But if during that process she says, well, I only did an intensive practicum, then I think we've got to review it a little bit different. Doesn't mean it's going to change the options. I just want to make sure that we're following the legal components of universal recognition.
So I would say two things then. Like, I still would be comfortable with board staff saying, hey, you know, we're going to take some time to look at this. We can't guarantee that this is going to be done in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days in terms of us doing a legal review around this. You know, in the meantime, you may want to, you know, this can sit here. You may want to review the more traditional path into licensure in the state of Arizona if you hit those qualifications. And, you know, that may be, you know, another option for you while we sort this out. Put it in their court to understand which their options are. It's not our job or Kathy's or Heidi's to tell them which application to complete, but we could direct them with one, acknowledging that this is going to take some time, and two, that there are other paths that they might be eligible for that they need to review to see if they'd like to apply in that fashion, which may be expedited then.
Absolutely. I agree. I think that if we gave them the choice that is, and they choose to withdraw their, like, and they have both options available to them. You can wait until we have a legal review, or you can choose to withdraw, and they choose to withdraw and go down that path. But if they choose not to withdraw because for whatever reason they choose not to, then we would have to start the pathway of potential denial, which has different reporting requirements.
But we can punt until we decide what we discern from our review of those, right? So we can continue to kind of drag it out till we get to that point. So yeah, I think it's their decision. You decide. Like, you take a look at either waiting while we sort some of this out, or taking a look at other paths into licensure and seeing if you qualify under one of those. If you find that you're going to qualify under one of those, then, and you don't want to wait, then apply, and we're happy to make that happen. You know, but I think that's really on the applicant to understand it, and we'll take our time to understand these other licensures that are out there that are not perfectly aligned with our statutes and rules.
Mr. Chair, just this isn't going to inform the discussion, I don't think, much at all, but just for the committee's benefit. The most recent application that the board forwarded to the governor's office with a indication of an intent to deny the application was for a psychologist applicant who the basis of the denial was that the qualifications presented indicated that the person cannot practice at the same practice level in our jurisdiction. So, and obviously that's a key element of the universal recognition application. So that was submitted to the governor's office on October 1st, and we don't have a response yet. So that if we had a response, that might be informative, but we don't have that.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pakanan, thank you. I think at least from what I hear, Dr. Davy and I are on the same page. So for board staff, I guess my question is, because normally what we say is, hey, in lieu of a denial, we'll let you withdraw this and go this other way. I just want to make sure that we're clear that our intention at this point is not to say, in lieu of a denial or encourage one way or another, but to just neutrally present both options. And they can choose either way. I agree. I like the way that Dr. Davey said, encourage them to look into the standards under the other practice so that, again, they're able to make their own informed choice of what they would like to do. And again, if they say, hey, I'm going to withdraw my application, I think I can get through it this way, I don't want to wait, then it wasn't, in my opinion, it wasn't us making a decision on the application. We allowed for the withdrawal without penalty, but we didn't make a decision on the application. So I think that that's a good, safe pathway, just because, like I said, anytime we make a decision on a universal recognition application, that has to go through the governor's office. So I just want to make sure that we're not accidentally backdooring something that gets us in hot water.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just want to confirm that if the applicant were to determine on her own that she would prefer to withdraw and apply through the general application, that you are comfortable with board staff just reassigning the fee from one application to another.
Absolutely. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think that makes a lot of sense.
Great.
So as a committee, do we want to offer, maybe not offer is the right word, but to at least lay those two things out as a possible selection? Or do we want to have legal counsel review Pennsylvania's laws compared to ours, or requirements, and then come back and have further discussion about this?
I think it's both, right? I think that what we're kind of saying is, listen, we need to do our research, and that may take some time. And so that's the reason we're going back to the applicant saying it's going to take some time for us to do some research on this. And, you know, you may want to look at those other paths. So I think those are two concurrent activities that we need to engage in: board staff reaching out, letting the applicant know where the status, and us working to put together probably a side-by-side table that looks at, you know, specific areas of our practice standards in the state as it relates to some of the states we've identified that may have licensure as, let's just say in this case, Pennsylvania behavior specialists, that might be less than what's required to operate in the state of Arizona as a behavior analyst. So they're two different activities, one including Gene and board staff, and one including board staff and the applicant.
And the applicant, sense? Yes, it does. And the applicant is on this call. Ms. Christie, do you, I mean, you've listened to the discussion. Any thoughts on that, or would you like to make any comments in regard to that?
No, I mean, I absolutely hear what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. So I don't know if I need to tell the committee now that I'd like to withdraw, or think about it later. I don't know what the next steps are really.
Yeah, yeah. So Ms. Packham, will board staff contact Ms. Christie to kind of give her, all right. So Ms. Christie, you can expect board staff to be contacting you and kind of summarizing and laying out choices that you would be able to make or want to make. So, okay. And then it also legal counsel will also be looking into this from the law perspective and the practice requirements for each state too. So, okay.
Okay. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Okay. Next applicant is Ms. Prowitz. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. And I will just say that this is going to be a very similar discussion, right? So here we have an individual coming forward for universal recognition who is doing it through the path of having behavior specialist license through the state of Pennsylvania. And, you know, as such, think the same same discussion we had just had applies here, and that we're not sure the alignment of the behavior specialist license at this particular point. We're going to engage in some research around that and look at whether or not it is essentially whether or not they hit the minimum education requirements, work experience, and clinical supervision requirements that are required to be licensed in the state of Arizona. In the meantime, I would say that we would encourage the applicant to look at other paths to licensure in the state. If they hit those requirements, that is a viable path for them to essentially withdraw the universal recognition application, ask the board to apply the fee to the other path, and that we would be amenable to that. Just as the asterisk, there's no guarantee that the other path will lead to licensure. It's incumbent upon the applicant to review those standards, those requirements, and make sure that they've hit those. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay. Any other comments from the committee? Okay. So Ms. Pakanon, same thing to this applicant, or applicant that Dr. Davey just reviewed, Ms. Krawitz. Okay, last applicant for this is Ms. Norris. Dr. Rates, your lead on that one?
Yes, I feel like I got the easier one of these three. So Ms. Norris is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Washington. I did look, it appears that those are quite similar. That was provided to her in July of 18. She did share information to show that she has established residency. The only note I had on the application is a clerical one, I believe, which is on page 7. She just didn't include an email address. So we just want to get that resolved. But apart from that, I don't have questions and would recommend we move this forward. But I will look to all of you to make sure I didn't miss anything important.
Committee members, any other comments? Okay, at this time, is there a motion to move, applicants for A, except for the noted that we've discussed, and B, for the exceptions that we discussed as well? Is there a motion for that?
That's a very discreet motion, but I'll go ahead and make that motion for you.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. That's probably the best I could do.
Good thing board staff's taking good notes.
Yes, I am relying on them for that, definitely. All right, do we have a second for that?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. We are at 11:20. Does anybody need a comfort break? We could recess until 11:30. Does that work for everybody? Or okay. All right. So let's reconvene at 11:30 then. So agenda item number 6, which is Dr. Davey.
Yeah, just a brief update on the telehealth committee's activities per the order of the bill that was passed. We recently submitted we haven't submitted yet. It's in draft form. We provided feedback on the first letter that will be looking at which codes should be permanently accepted as appropriate for telephonic implementation. As I noted to this committee previously, our code set for behavior analysts, as it relates to the adaptive behavior code set, is problematic because of the face-to-face terminology. And so there are several codes that have that terminology in it. We're not the only ones. We have made the suggestion in the edits that they include three of the codes that would be appropriate for telephonic implementation in a letter that will go to CMS requesting that they either one, work with the AMA to remove the face-to-face requirement or direct policy to approve that. And so that's where that stands today.
All right, thank you. Okay, agenda item number 7, Ms. Pakenham.
All right, yes, Mr. Chair. So two updates from the ACB. The first update, we will dive into a deeper discussion about this with the next agenda item, but there's been some discussion on the regulators' listserv relative to finding some strategies to encourage certificates or licensed behavior analysts, depending on their jurisdiction, to attend the regulatory board's meetings, and in doing so, be awarded some CEU credit. And so a creative solution was crafted in the form of the BACB agreeing to permit licensing boards, regulatory boards, to apply to become authorized continuing education or ACE providers. And in doing so, waiving the fee for the board. So making that process quite a bit easier. So again, with the next agenda item, we'll talk about whether to make that decision for that recommendation for our jurisdiction. But I am prepared to take the committee's recommendation and the board's direction on that issue. Dr. Davey had chimed into this discussion. And so if he has anything else to add.
I think it's a great opportunity, obviously, for our LBAs in the state to be able to reinforce attendance and activities at this regulatory level. And so I think it's going to be a good opportunity for us to encourage that. Psychologists already provide that at the regular board meetings, and this would give us kind of that same equal opportunity.
Indeed, it brings some parity to this issue, which of course that credit wouldn't necessarily be applicable to meeting the continuing education requirements for our state, but at least it would fulfill some requirements for the BACB. And in the meantime, that rule that, I don't remember the citation, I'd have to find it, but your continuing education requirements in title or chapter 4 of the rules, we can modify that language to award continuing education credit for purposes of licensure renewal. So that would be a companion piece to what we're looking at with respect to becoming an ACE provider.
Yeah, very good.
And so the second update from the BACB is one of the many changes that are coming in less than a month from now is the requirement that anyone who's in their first year of certification who completes the supervisor training and assumes supervisory duties must have a consulting supervisor. And that relationship, that engagement needs to be documented. And so the question was raised by Dr. Davey, how are we as a staff, committee, board, and so forth, how are we to ascertain that supervisors are in fact in compliance with this requirement? So I sought clarification from Misty Bloom and have supplied her answer. What my takeaway from this is that I think we have to trust that the audit process is going to compel first year certificates to comply with this requirement. It may be that we're going to find some after the fact instances that, managed to slip through where that requirement was not met. And so, we're going to have to deal with those on a case by case basis because, obviously the licensure decision has already been made. So, it's imperfect in my mind, but again, I really hope that that audit potential impresses this responsibility very clearly on those individuals. Other than that explanation and what little insights I have, that's all the information I can offer at this time.
So can I make a comment on that? So one of the things I was thinking about, and this actually relates to our application in general, and knowing that this is kind of coming at some particular point down the road, is when we, right now, when the supervisors form, when they sign off and attest that they're knowledgeable of this, would we consider updating that form, if they are in their first year of certification, then they would attest that they have been receiving that. And if they're a BCBA for the last 10 years, then it's an NA, right? Mm-hmm. And is that, and it also brings me to a second question, but it's related but unrelated to that same point of like, when did you complete your supervision modules for the BACB? You know, those two items pop up. I mean, I see this item coming up. Those items, I think, may be on that form where the supervisor is the one completing it and providing us the information and then signing off on it. Maybe that's where we capture it. And again, it's the same trust issue, right? Like, they're going to say they did it. If it ever comes back that the BACB audits them and we're made aware of that you have someone in Arizona who did this, then that would be, we would have then the grounds to say, you told us you were on the up and up. We certified this person and we're not going to go back or license this person. We're not going to go back on them, but we're definitely going to come after you for what you falsely identified on this form, right? I mean, I think that's the only teeth we can really have. My thought around that is, do we look at just updating that particular form with regard to supervised work experience and independent field work to capture that this item in particular and perhaps that supervision module question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that's a suggestion that we can take to Jean and see if we do, in fact, have the authority to augment our form to include that information. To your point, yes, any Arizona licensed supervisor who states, you know, yes, I'm in compliance, and then if an audit proved otherwise, then the statutory violation about making a false statement to the board, that would certainly be something we would be compelled to take a closer look at. So I'll make a note of this and we'll bring the question to Jean, and perhaps by next month we'll have an answer. I don't think this is something that is terribly imminent because it's a requirement, of course, in just a few weeks, but it's not going to present, immediately.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Ms. Hagman, I was trying to pull it up and I don't see it in the Google Drive, so I was trying to find it in a different place. Our rules around supervision, do we have the generic, like whatever the BACB, or is the supervisor qualifications spelled out? Because I think that's what we'd have to look out first is, in our current rules, do we have the authority to even change that form?
Yes. Let me see. I think we forgot to move the resources folder from the previous meeting into this meeting. I'll see if Zakiya can move that over, or maybe Kathy. Sorry, I'm scrolling through the rules right now to see if I can find that answer.
I've got that file saved like 1,000 places, but can never find it when I want.
I know, that's my thing. I'm like frantically trying to find it too.
And even if we can't right now, again, the question can go to Jean and she can come back and tell us, you know, where we stand on that.
I agree. Because we don't necessarily need that clarity right here, right now. We do have some time, but we'll bring this back to the committee next month.
Thank you.
All right. So are we good on that item?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're on 8 now. Is that correct? Ms. Backenham?
I believe so. And that is the rule?
That is the BAC. Yeah, the coordinator.
Oh, yes, I beg your pardon. The application for just easy summary, if we're going to move forward with applying to be an ACE provider, we do need to designate someone who is a BCBA to take responsibility to be essentially, in my mind, this person obviously is the authority to sign off on any of the requirements. And obviously, you know, the content manager, if you will, of that process. But I also see this person working very closely with board staff, because I think that it would be unreasonable or unrealistic for the designee to be responsible for all the documentation requirements. So staff can manage that piece as long as we have someone who is, you know, holds the proper certification to be the designee for this process. So I think we're looking for a vote or a determination of who will be that person, and then I think we need to bring this recommendation to the board.
So a couple comments on that, right? So I had two thoughts. One, when I found out about this, I told Heidi, I'm like, I'll volunteer to do it. But then as I'm sitting here thinking, Heidi, is that maybe the chair of the committee's job, right? Is whoever is the chair? I mean, but does it allow us to change it year over year with the chairmanship, or even 2 years since Don's, we're never going to let Don leave? Or is it something that needs to be stationary, where it would be the two members of the larger board that sit on the committee? So some of it may be a stability question for us as to where we go. Again, I was excited about it, so I just kind of volunteered that I'll, you know, sign off on it and help us work through the first couple of years of this. But I also could see it being part of the chair's purview as the chair of the committee.
So the question of that is would these credits be signed off at the committee level and the board level? Is that accurate to say?
I would think so.
For the credits?
You have to attend the committee meeting to get the credits.
Okay, and the board meetings, if you're signing off on board meeting attendance too, right?
If they applied for that through the board, yes. But I don't know that we would actually do the full, they would not, the full board meeting, that's a good question, because if it's not all pertaining to behavior analysts, like the boards are, while there's regulatory issues in there, there's a chunk of the agenda, there'd only be a portion of the agenda that would actually probably hit the ACE requirements for attendance there. So we may want to tailor it a little bit tighter to this is the committee is where you can get the credits, and you can attend the bigger board issues when, you know, if something elevates to there, but no guarantee of credits for that. But I think we can sort that out maybe as we go forward.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, Dr. Davey, the ACE provider, the ACE coordinator has quite a bit of tasks that they have to do. And so I would suggest maybe it not be the chair, simply because there would have to be some level of prep work for each meeting, and the chair's already having to do prep work for each meeting. I think to that same point, because of what goes into documentation for ACE approved events, we could choose board meetings that count and or don't count for ACE events, depending on the amount of time we think behavior analytic content, or, you know, some like complaints would, you know, even though it's a psychologist and other things, like it would still meet the requirements of the ACE piece. So my only thing, I am an ACE coordinator. I've been one for years. I would just say that there's documentations and then annual audits. I think if it was also the chair's responsibility, that would be a lot of work for a volunteer chair position.
I think that's what Heidi was alluding to, that board staff would try to keep this person as organized as possible. You know, obviously there's work that has to be done by the licensed or the certified individual. But yeah, I think when Heidi reviewed it, she was like, wow, this is not simple.
Yeah, you know, I think we could simplify. Oh, sorry, Tisha.
That's okay.
I think we could simplify several aspects of it, but there's still some monthly tasks and some annual tasks. Go ahead.
Thanks. And I mean, Dr. Davey, what I would say, coming back to what you were discussing as far as the transferring, like how it moves from here to there, I received for the organization that I oversee, the organizational ACE provider from Diana. So that transfer moving from person to person was relatively painless. You know, it wasn't an extensive process. One, because Diana is meticulously organized in that event, and I have no doubt that board staff would ensure that the next provider would be the same of no doubt. But, you know, in terms of who it would transfer to, that wasn't too terribly challenging.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like it's a form online.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, to Ms. Denton's point, the transfer itself is super easy. And I think because board staff will already have files and process, because that's what it really takes, is just making sure you have a process for your annual audits, making sure you have a process for saving the documents per meeting, which will already be easy. The agenda, we can have standard objectives per meeting. I don't think we have to get specific on the objectives for the most part. And so I think for the most part, other than just reviewing it and okaying it, that part will be easy. And then the only other consideration would just be the delegation of the hours can't be to board staff. So if there were a time in which there were new meeting content something new that requires outcomes to be written or whatever, that does have to come from a behavior analyst, not necessarily the ACE provider, though. You can delegate it to the committee. You just wouldn't be able to delegate some things to the board staff.
I kind of saw that as we would come up with probably a working list of objectives, because it's application review. It may be review of, I can think of like five general topics that we could write the objectives for that fall like in disciplinary. All of them are going to fall under ethics. You know, it's almost like we could have, some of that stuff at the committee level kind of canned and ready to go. We are pretty much, it's not as if we're training on error correction procedure and then stimulus control and then behavior reduction, like where there's such drastic differences. The conversation that was going on with the BACB was that, the board's actions or the committee's actions are pretty straightforward in what we engage in terms of our purview. And so I could see us kind of creating, kind of our own playbook of how to streamline this over a period of time. And I think that would probably take all of us as a committee to help formulate.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, do we happen to know who, which jurisdiction has already moved through this process? It's not identified in Ms. Bloom's communication. So it may be that this first jurisdiction, they already have a playbook that they might be willing to share with us.
Absolutely. I think it was Kentucky. I'm not entirely sure. I'll have to go back and look.
Okay, that was my hunch, but I was afraid to say that out loud.
I'll be happy to be wrong. But I do think it's...
So what are the things... Okay, one of the things that staff has done recently for purposes of trying to organize and more easily capture information from psychologist licensees attending the board meeting for continuing education credit is to intake that information through a Google form. So, we could apply the same approach here, which really does make that data management piece a whole lot easier for us. I do think that, just speaking from the staff perspective, measuring the behavior analyst content in the full board meeting, that's going to be probably our bigger challenge. So my suggestion would be we start with the Committee on Behavior Analysts awarding credit for attendance at that meeting, and then evaluate and perfect our processes, measure our success before maybe we move on to something that's a little bit more daunting, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacman, to that same point, anything that 99, maybe 98% of everything that goes to the board comes through the committee first anyway. Mm-hmm. So they would have the opportunity to hear. And I mean, there are a few things that have to go straight to the board. But those are, you know, very special circumstances. We may not even want to consider even like emergency meetings and stuff, like even consider going down that road. So I think that that's a reasonable like goal to set up, because everything is going to come through the committee first anyway.
Yeah. And the other thing I flagged just for us to work through, Heidi, is, you know, the documentation, and again, having two ACE coordinators, you know, I'm thinking you guys are going to be, you're going to be in charge of this whole thing. But think about like event syllabi, right, which is one of the requirements and the presentation materials. In our case, the agenda would really serve as the syllabi. Presentation materials, we're probably not going to send those to the BACB. And I think we're not going to send applications and different, you know, investigative reports over. And so I think that that's something we can go back to the BACB. Again, this is new to them. So we actually have a chance here to kind of shape this of how boards and committees are going to work with our national body. And so there may be, you know, if we say, listen, we're just going to send you the agenda and, you know, we could send you informational documents that are going to be public, but we're not going to release, you know, the 165 supervision pages that came through today for one of the applications. Like, that's just not reasonable for us to do that. So we may be able to shape up what kind of documentation proactively we can shape it up of what we will provide or wouldn't provide to them. Obviously, we have all those records there. Like, if they ever wanted to come back and say, well, tell us about this applicant that you know, on this meeting date where you gave two CEUs on ethics, like, we already have it all built into the drives. It's not like it's not there. So I think that we would, I think the BACB is really looking at promoting professionals, particularly all the young professionals, to paying attention to what's happening to them through rules, regulations, and such.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would agree with that. I speculate on some level, but I do think that the spirit of this movement, of this focus is exactly what you said. And it may be that, you know, we are a slightly square peg, you know, trying to be retrofitted into a round hole, but it seems to me that the BACB would be willing to, you know, be accommodating. Otherwise, they wouldn't have already, you know, made these accommodations for regulatory boards in the form of waiving the fee and, you know, really encouraging us to consider this opportunity.
So where do we stand? Just gathering some more information at this point, Ms. Beckman, what do we want to do? And, you know,
Mr. Chair, that's up to the committee. If you feel that you are comfortable to move forward with a recommendation to the board, I have that matter just on the December 10th agenda as a placeholder in case you make that decision today. And then, you know, that's something that I would look at the two behavior analyst board members to really, you know, lead that discussion and help bring the rest of the board up to speed as to what we're considering. And if the board approves the recommendation that yes, we want to move forward with an application to be an approved ACE provider, then, you know, we determine how we're going to make that happen. And I'm happy to sit down with whoever is tasked with this responsibility and we'll work through all the logistics together.
You have two that can actually help you. So the more I'm thinking about this is I'll be happy to present it to the board, and Tisha can help and Diana can help. I was just super excited when it first came out. I was like, oh my gosh, we've got to do this so we can get some, you know, I always felt bad that the psychologists get to come in, and I always actually felt bad for Diana's students because she forced them to attend. And now we can, you know, at least if some of them are already, you know, working, you know, towards their BCBA after the fact, they know that they come once, they get a sense of it, and after they're licensed, they can get credit for attending. So
I would say that, you know, the students that come through, Diana, that you make come through that are at my organization, they really enjoy coming to these meetings and they actually don't complain about it at all. Because they're all just as nerdy as the rest of us. And they're like, that is so cool.
So what do you, so Ms. Back and I think Diana and I are, Dr. Davis Wilson and I are more than happy to talk to the full board about it. What do we need to, do we have to decide the ACE person today, or can we kind of let everybody let that kind of sit in and go from there? What do you need from us besides, I think we want to talk to the board about it, and I think Diane and I can handle that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, maybe it does make more sense just to get, you know, the board's buy-in first and then make the decision about the ACE coordinator at a later date. I'm just going to throw this out there for, this is your decision, but you may determine that whoever is tasked or whoever agrees to do this role maybe is, would be excused to some degree from other committee responsibilities. I just maybe mention that in case the responsibility is such that, you know, assigning complaint reviews, you know, assigning that person to be a lead on complaint reviews, or, you know, giving them the same percentage of application reviews, maybe that's not fair and equitable, but just something for you to contemplate.
Absolutely. And I think Diana's point, and probably Tisha would bring the same point, is probably not appropriate for the chair, given the workload. So probably an exclusion there of can't be both.
Mm-hmm. It very well may go through a process of elimination for some of us. I'm not sure that I can be a multiple organizational ACE provider. I'm not sure if Diana can either. So it's like, Dr. Rates, Dr. Davy, eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
I think I'm automatically excluded because I sit on the full board and have that responsibility. So
well,
they're right there, Dr. Rates, on my screen. They're right there. That is unless Dr. Rates becomes chairwoman and kicks Dawn out, and then it'd be Dawn.
That's true too.
Oh, the exciting choices.
Pick your poison. Pick your poison.
I'm happy to do so if that's needed. Not a problem at all. The ACE provider. Let's start there.
Let's be clear.
All right. Well, good. And if you want to, then please put this on the full board's agenda for Dr. Davis Wilson and I to speak to the board about.
Most certainly. Thank you.
All right. Any further comments on that?
Dr. Rates should blame Tisha for that.
there's always paybacks, right?
Yes. Retribution is going to be brutal.
Yeah. It's a wonderful experience. Don't retribute.
Really nicely said. So, okay, agenda item number 9, Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to share my screen for purposes of showing the committee what we are preparing. This is still in draft form relative to a page on our website where registrant individuals who are interested in applying for the registry can come to review the requirements, you know, apply and so forth. So why I'm bringing this to you in particular is to address that a need that this committee has discussed. It's been also discussed in the board meeting that we need to provide some clarity to anyone, behavior analyst who might be looking at the registry as a solution to provide telehealth supervision by telehealth into Arizona. And so just to explain that the a registration is not equivalent to holding a license granted by this board. I worked with Dr. Davis Wilson to draft the language that you see right here in this paragraph. So I invite you to take a look at that and give us any feedback as to whether you think that this makes this clear that you can't, a registration is not equivalent to the license that's required.
So my only comment would be in the second sentence, the but not licensed, just mm-hmm. either adding but not licensed in Arizona will not count. I know you've got the Arizona licensed in the first sentence, but I think just driving home, again, this is an Arizona license. that must be held, right? Because it's...
I agree. I think it sounds redundant, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
I think that my team who works with applicants would agree entirely. There's sometimes redundancies are necessary.
I just think tying it to Arizona every single time is our best bet.
Agree. So this page is not live. It's just sort of it's drafted and we're still playing with the format. We're not in love with it right now. So particularly that the logo just seems a little weirdly placed. So we're still tinkering with the layout, but we want the content to be ready for that point in time when we start, we launch the registry and we start the intake process. So I didn't want to be caught off guard. I wanted us to be prepared so we can make this page go live the moment that we are offering registry applications.
Ben?
Yep. And again, to my my department of redundancy, mm-hmm. I would stick the term Arizona in the first sentence again. I would stick it for trainees occurring supervision hours for Arizona licensure. Supervision by an Arizona licensed behavior analyst is required. Therefore, supervision hours provided by the BCBA who is registered through the telehealth registry but is not licensed in Arizona will not count. Like I know it's redundancy, but that would be my edits.
staff is in support of all of those suggested changes. We think it removes any possible ambiguity.
I know Dawn's
I have questions here.
Struck and White's coming out in him and he doesn't like it.
I'll live.
When it comes to this component, and perhaps it's a conversation that's already happened that I just can't recollect, what services can you provide through a telehealth registry? So you can't really supervise someone in the state of Arizona towards licensure. You can provide services overseeing just a regular case.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead. I'll.
Sorry, Miss Pacman. Tisha, yes. So what the telehealth registry allows is for behavior analysts to provide services in Arizona remotely. And so I envision, especially some of the agencies that are national, that there will be some RBT and other case supervision occurring that will fall under this telehealth registry.
And the telehealth registry doesn't have time limitations?
Mr. Chair, the registry, as the language stands now, it's an initial application. And it does require annual reporting and annual renewal of information. At this time, we can't charge a renewal fee, but there's a requirement on the part of anyone who is granted a registration privilege to report patient contact information. So we are going to be inundated by registrants with this information and it's not clear to me what responsibility we will have for this information, but that's the way the language reads right now. Does that answer your question?
I have an additional question, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to keep throwing questions out there.
Okay. And I do have to update or to augment what Dr. Davis Wilson said previously, and I can have maybe Zakiya send this information to you. The statute 36-3602 is it was part of this big sweeping legislation that the registry is a component of that bill, but really the practice allowance, that language is all spelled out in 36-3602. So I can have her send that to you so you can read what it encompasses.
That's perfect. That was the question I was going towards is okay. If all of this information was in ARS 36-606, but it's in 3602. So I will be excited to receive that and better understand
Yes, and actually, better yet, there's an entire article under Chapter 36. It's not entirely new. I can't remember what statute language previously existed, but it's expanded tremendously. So it's Chapter 36, Telehealth is the title. Article 1, there are 8 statutes under that. So maybe we'll send them to all of you for your reading pleasure.
Any further questions on this item or comments? Okay, let's move on to agenda item number 10. Ms. Pakenham, you're up again.
Yes, so one of the follow-up items that I was tasked with following the most recent last month's review of possible revisions to the Arizona Administrative Code, the article that regulates behavior analysts, was to propose some language relative to a possible reciprocity rule. So realizing that I was somewhat in over my head, I reached out to Dr. Davis Wilson for some assistance with this. And so we have prepared for your review some possible language. And I do want to be clear that when you contemplate something of this nature, endorsement or reciprocity, there are some policy decisions which have to be made along the way. So most of those decisions look something like this. Are you comfortable with acknowledging the past, what the past required in terms of, you know, education, qualifications, and training and so forth? You have to be comfortable with those in order to really carve this pathway or forge this pathway for reciprocity. And I think that's something that only this committee can truly discuss and debate and decide. So the way we approached this was to present the language initially for just the general application. So R-426-403 outlines all the requirements for just the general, you know, you're applying for licensure as a behavior analyst, not universal recognition, just the general pathway. So you can compare and contrast that to what Dr. Davis Wilson and I drafted, which appears on the next page. Let me move my tiles out of the way. So I think the first discussion point that you need to have would be, is someone eligible for reciprocity only if they are licensed in another jurisdiction, which would preclude, of course, anyone who is in a jurisdiction that doesn't require licensure. Does that make sense?
So just so I'm following, like I see the comment, right? This would clearly preclude anyone qualifying for licensure if they've only practiced in a state that doesn't. So California, let's just use California, right?
Right.
So someone who's trying to come in for this that has only worked in California would be essentially denied.
Not eligible, no. Potentially.
Okay. So is the question you're asking for is how do we wordsmith this to avoid that?
So let's let the rule writer do that. But if you're making the decision that in order to be eligible to apply by reciprocity, you must have been licensed in another jurisdiction, that's what we'll tell the rule writer. Make sure this rule reflects that. And I'm going to make a case for why I think you would want to limit it to only people who have been licensed in another jurisdiction. Part of the reciprocity or endorsement process is to ascertain, have they ever been disciplined by another board? If there is no board, if there is no regulation of that kind, then, you know, I think that that's a little bit, that's concerning. right? I think you would want to make certain that you have an opportunity to evaluate that other board, that person's licensure history or compliance or you know, standing with that other board. And in doing so, you may see an applicant who has been disciplined, you know, maybe it was discipline that isn't of a concern. Maybe it was a decree of censure or a reprimand for something that happened 8 years ago. It's something you would want to address and, you know, speak to the applicant and, you know, potentially decide this person isn't a threat to public safety for coming to our state. But in my mind, reciprocity and endorsement requires some insights about that person's record in another jurisdiction. And if they're not licensed, then you don't have that opportunity. I hope that's clear.
Yeah, no, I think it's very clear. And I think that reciprocity is license to license, not certification to certification. So I have no issues.
Anyone else have thoughts about that?
I agree. I think reciprocity should deal with licensure, not anything else.
Not the absence of, really.
Correct.
So then the next section that we talked about that requires, you know, again, some thought and some discussion. So verification of supervised experience that met the requirements specified by the BACB at the time of initial certification. So again, what you're being asked to consider is it acceptable that because that person met the requirements that existed at that point in history, that person has had opportunity through practice, through continuing education, through active engagement in the profession, that they have over time acquired the experience that is substantially equivalent to that which you require right now, today. Do you need an example to sort of make sense of this?
That'd be helpful.
Okay, so once upon a time, to be a licensed physical therapist, you needed only a bachelor's degree and a certificate. And the training that was required consisted merely of a couple of brief clinical rotations. After January 1 of 2002, that degree was elevated to a post-baccalaureate degree requirement and much more training, many more hours of clinical training. But the endorsement or the reciprocity pathway for physical therapy doesn't preclude that person who only had the bachelor's degree and the certificate and the fewer hours of training so as not to be punitive simply because they graduated in 1987, at which time the post-baccalaureate degree didn't exist. The training requirements weren't expanded. So the policy decision you're making is, sure, that person met the qualifications for licensure at that point in time, and over time, they have augmented their knowledge, their competency, through practice.
Okay. So in reading it, verification of supervised experience that meet the standards, do we need that next couple words, to meet the standards specified by the BACB at the time of initial, do we need the meets the standards that meet the requirements? Or is it just that meets the standards specified by?
I am not certain. Does Dr. Davis Wilson have a response to that?
I wonder if it just didn't get crossed out. Just seems...
Yeah, I see. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I see the redundancy. Sure, I'll clean that up.
I'm in charge of the Department of Redundancy.
Clearly. Okay, very good.
If you've decided it's excessive redundancy, then it is.
So thoughts on that?
I think that makes sense. I think we've experienced that, right? We've had people who were certified long ago, and we want to be able to allow them to practice.
Exactly, yes. So hearing no objections to that, moving on. So this is the coursework piece. So the first, we just moved on from training. So this would be whatever coursework was required, course content. So again, it may be minimal. I don't know. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure how far the education requirement goalposts have moved over time. You have a better understanding of that, obviously, but this is essentially you're making the same consideration here as you did previously.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we said above, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's got to meet, like, you essentially were in line at the time.
Right, exactly. And so you've said you're comfortable with acknowledging whatever, you know, the training requirements, you met those at that point in time. You've met the educational requirements at that point in time. Do you want to augment those with any sort of employment history to better, to give you more confidence that this person has been in active practice? If you do, what must that consist of? What must that look like? And how do you evaluate it? This, to me, is the harder piece of it. Is it sufficient to say, you know, we simply require 5 years of relevant experience, or we require, I'm not sure exactly how you quantify it and how you set, what standards you set in the process. Is that clear?
Is there any guidance from the psychologist about, like, I guess when I think about those of us, you know, when we complete our CAQH files, right, if there's any lapse in work history, you know, it kind of has flagged of, like, what were you doing? Why weren't you engaged in clinical activities, right? I mean, is that what we're asking, is we want to make sure that they've been in practice? Or would we just say that the fact that they're continuing to gather CEUs and keep their certification active and their license active, that that's enough to verify that they're in good standing? They're not in good standing, but active.
So the latter example is typically what I've seen with an endorsement or reciprocity pathway. It's enough to say that you have held active licensure. It's enough to say that you have, and, you know, in doing so, you've been completing, you know, CEs to maintain that license. In the PT world, I only knew of one jurisdiction who said, hey, to endorse or to apply by reciprocity into our state, you need a work requirement. That was Minnesota. Minnesota wanted to get rid of that because it was such an impossible thing for that board to evaluate and to ascertain, well, this work history is fine, and this work history is reported is not. They just didn't have, they required a work history, but they didn't know where to, you know, where to draw the line in terms of what was acceptable and what was not. So I think it's really challenging to include a work history, quite frankly. So if active license is what is required for reciprocity, you do have some assurance that they were maintaining that license according to the other jurisdiction's requirements.
Okay.
But you may feel very differently about this. There are some professions who, and some boards who insist the work history is an important piece of reciprocity.
I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'm good with the active license, which shows continued education and engagement in the field versus employment history. I'm also concerned knowing that we have such a, you know, we've crossed over the 50% mark of individuals that have held their license for less than 3 years now that are BCBAs out there, that those are young men and women that are going to be starting families that'll have gaps in employment for particular reasons. And that to me just seems like a lot of paperwork for us to slog through and try to coordinate when really we're just making sure that they've been actively engaged in the field.
Right.
I would agree with you, Brian.
Okay, so moving on, then we found two other instances where we needed to make some adjustment then in order to ensure that there we didn't have other barriers to a reciprocity, to establishing a reciprocity pathway. So our 426.401.1, the education requirement, we said delete subsection A would take care of that issue.
Yeah.
And same for your supervised experience requirement rule, R426.404.2, deleting subsection A2.
And that's just because of the dates, correct? The dates.
Correct.
Back, yeah. Okay.
Correct. So if the committee is comfortable with making this recommendation to the board that this would essentially be a new rule. So adding a new rule, as we've discussed previously, you have the statutory authority to allow for application through reciprocity. This rule would really make that happen. So, I mean, I would think that the board would be receptive to hearing a recommendation that, you know, what this essentially means is that experience.
I found this on the web.
Excuse me. I hit my watch and decided to talk to me. The board would be receptive to hearing things such as, you know, the rationale for this would be, again, you know, bringing experienced BCBAs to our state, because there are known instances where they would be precluded from meeting the requirements because the requirements are crafted to meet, to reflect today's requirements for certification.
Can I ask a clarifying question on the section we covered just above here on education?
This right. one?
Yeah. So you had indicated remove A. I'm wondering in B under 2, maybe it doesn't apply because it's somebody before January. So maybe this is not needed, but it would seem like, again, that statement of requirements specified by the BCBA at the time of their certification, because that may change. We've kind of covered it above, but could it be that the requirements of the BCBA for a program to be certified have changed over time?
That is a good question to which I don't have an answer. I don't have enough insight to be helpful, unfortunately.
I just am not sure if they have. I mean, I think they have over time.
Yeah, they have.
Absolutely. I don't know if they have since this date that's listed here, but I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to change over time. And I wonder if we don't need that statement in here. In a program that meets the requirements specified by the BACB at the time of your certification.
Right.
Yeah, that might clarify that.
I think that accomplishes that, yes. Okay. Very good. So if the committee wants to take a vote to forward this to the board for consideration, I think I can get it on the December 10th agenda, and we can, I'm very eager to start beginning the process of the rule drafting. I tried to engage our contract rule writer earlier this month to start the process, and she held me off until this month, but I'd really like to give her the material this month and get her started on that task.
And then just to Dr. Ritz's comment, do we need to look at anything else on the one below on 26404.2? Could you scroll down? Just want to make sure that, now that she's pointed that out, this section is not planned. But we're just going to delete all of two.
Right.
Okay. So I guess we're good there because it does not apply to anyone before.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're essentially knocking down those barriers. In addition to carving out a pathway, you're removing any language and other rules that would undermine a new rule and its intent. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
So do we have a motion to have this proposed before the full board? All right. Dr. Ritz, was that a motion?
I'll make that motion, yeah.
All right, and do you have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Let's see, agenda item number 11, Ms. Pakenham.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I was tasked with bringing you this, what I hope you were asking for anyway, the application and average number of licenses data that I routinely update and, you know, report to various entities. What I wanted to do is to augment those graphs with the tables and the memorandum, which in my mind, that's the story that I wanted to tell. And I hope that's the one that you were interested in. So you can see, just for comparison purposes, I had mentioned, you know, last month, without supporting it, that the behavior analysts are outpacing the psychologists. And I think these tables really illustrate that fact. So it's even more dramatic than I, you know, remembered once I put this information or you know, assemble this information in this format. So I'd be interested in your reactions, but anything else that you want me to sort of analyze and prepare for you. One thing that I didn't do, which I wish that I had, and I could certainly do this at a later date, to project at what point in time, possibly, the behavior analysts will overtake the psychologists should these trends continue at this pace. So,
let's not freak them out, but we better not. I feel like somebody might really get nervous.
Possibly. Anyway, any thoughts, reactions, or additional direction that you want to give to me?
No, I think if this came from the conversation I wanted to have, I think just, you know, maybe, you know, as part of the yearly update or however you want to do this, just like, you know, getting this back in front of us, you know, at the end of each year, however, or just in some sort of cadence where we look at it, I think would be extremely helpful, just as we kind of look at what the needs are. And I also think that the application numbers, you know, at some point, we may need to think about adding additional committee members to help us work through applications if these trends continue. I mean, year over year trends for applications, you know, obviously 2021, where you saw the psychologist have a change of almost 40% with COVID, we experienced the 4% downward trend, but the percentages are still just crazy in terms of increases that we're dealing with. So I think that kind of information, as we approach maybe a request for additional members to the committee, would be extremely helpful. My second comment is more of a crazed individual comment. So if you're going to use the database that you've got going on right now to create the graphs, the first graph has psychologists as blue and behavior analysts as orange. When we get down to the secondary one, the colors switch. So if we could just keep the colors the same that would help me, because I got down to the graph and I was like, wait, there's no behavior analyst. And then I noted it on the legend. So that's just me being crazy.
No, that's really great feedback. I can easily.
I don't know that it's great feedback, Heidi. Let's not stretch it. Okay, I'm going to be honest. I know it's not great feedback. It's feedback.
Well, and this is Excel, so it's not anything that's particularly sophisticated. So it's an easy change, but I definitely see your point. And I did include those temporary emergency. Applications or applications in this illustration, because this information is sent to policymakers, and I want there to be awareness that that is an administrative task that is performed. And I'm not sure that this committee is aware that the temporary emergency licensure applications, those fees are waived. So it is quite a bit of work, you know, involved the applications are themselves are fairly simple and straightforward and can be administratively processed quite easily, but still there's no revenue coming in to perform those functions. So those won't always exist. Of course, at some point the state of emergency will be declared over and we won't have that license type anymore. But I'll continue, of course, to graph these numbers and report them, because I do think that they are informative for policymakers. And you are raising, I think, an important consideration. Should there be more, should we expand as a regulatory body? And of course, the conversation has been raised in the past. At what point will all signs point to behavior analysts requiring their own regulatory board? And we know we're not there, but this will help, I think, inform those future discussions whenever they happen.
Thank you. And was this something that will also go to the full board? Will you be presenting this data to the full board at some point?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, so I do include, these graphs are embedded in the submission that I prepare on an annual basis that's associated with our request for appropriation. So the board sees them with my executive director's report. I'm not sure how much, you know, analysis they do of this information, but the way I see coming back to the request that you made earlier, I can supply this on an annual basis, and maybe it makes sense to do it at the same time the board is seeing this information, which is generally the September timeframe.
Yeah, I think so, because I think, you know, I think I would probably, as I sitting on the board, I would probably pull this out when you talked and bring to point, you know, this discussion of additional members that may be needed and get the board at least thinking about those things. And so when you do present at the annual time, like, I will definitely note that and make sure that the full board is hearing some of the concerns from this committee with regard to workload and application matters.
Any other things on that item? Questions, comments? Okay, agenda item number 12. Any suggestions for future items? I know we talked about a lot of that, so let's get that on the list. Or Ms. Pakanon, was there a list being made as we had our meeting today? Or
two items, right? So there was one that had to do with whether or not we could take a look at the supervised fieldwork attestation and add a couple items there, and whether or not our rules and statutes would allow us to do that. So that's maybe something that Gene can take a look at with board staff and get back to us. And the second one had to do with starting to research the behavior specialist license in Pennsylvania and seeing, you know, essentially doing a side-by-side comparison of whether or not it is an equivalent practice per universal recognition terminology. And I think that terminology is probably part three of 32.4302 that regards or that reads a person's licensed or certified by another state, that their minimum education requirements, work experience, clinical supervision requirements in effect, and that the other state verifies the person meets those requirements to be in order to be licensed in, you know, the state of Arizona. So I think it's just getting us some clarification from Gene of whether or not we have a good process to do side-by-side comparisons and then make determinations.
Any other items? Okay, so hearing none, we'll move on to agenda number 13, adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved.
All right, second.
I'll say
all right, further discussion. All right, adjourn. All right. Hope you all have a good good December, good Christmas, and I'll see you next month.